And that's my conversation with Patrick Wright. He is the director of the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation. I've had him Pat on before, and just really appreciate him spending some time with us today. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning. Doing wonderful.
You get more sleep than I did during the election. I guess downstate this wasn't near as important, probably.
Actually, I stayed up till 1 o'clock checking the returns on the Michigan 1 district there. So I was following it as well. When I went to sleep, however, I think it was Benishek up 12 votes. So obviously there's been some major movement of 11 votes since then.
Yeah, the AP is still walking around saying it's 12 votes. And I don't know how they can say that when you've got to go by the Secretary of State count. And their final count says one vote. And they seem the AP seems to think they've got a different count than the people who actually count the numbers. Which doesn't make it. Now, I'm not beating anybody up. I mean, obviously, the election has to be certified and all that. It just seemed peculiar as a, from a broadcast coverage standpoint.
Yeah, I had a little difficulty coming up with that myself. I had been sending out emails to our staff. You know, we were following a lot of elections, obviously, even though sure. We don't endorse candidates at the Mackinac Center. We're interested in who the politicians are. And so I had some trouble figuring out why those numbers didn't match up either. I was following the Detroit News, which was taking AP numbers, and then I woke up and somebody had posted the Secretary of State's numbers. Well, these are not quite the same.
Yeah, this has got to be the closest election in Michigan history for a state or regional office. It has to be.
You can't get closer than one, so
no.
Yeah.
Unless you tie. I mean, that's it, so... Yeah, if it stands, this has got to hit. We're going for the state, at least the state record books, no doubt. Patrick Wright, as I mentioned, is here this hour. We're going to be talking about some. I guess this is another part to something we've been talking about on and off here for quite a while, and that is first off the Sherry Lohr and more importantly home daycare providers story across the state. Sherry being just a living example of a lawsuit. So what happened to the home daycare workers? For the if you've already heard this story, you kind of indulge us. We make sure everybody who hasn't gets caught up real quick.
Well, in short, what happened was a bunch of people who were running their own businesses out of their house, providing daycare, who were being hired by parents, had wages and living conditions, I mean, with the parents, somehow ended up becoming government employees and ended up in a government employees union and paying union dues. And the process by which this was done is a touch shady. It was done through something called an interlocal agreement where a community college and the Department of Human Services got together. They created this new entity called the Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council, and this child care council said that it was going to act as the employer in collective bargaining negotiations with the public employees unions. Those negotiations happened, and all of a sudden, the union was getting about $3.7 million in dues a year.
Yeah, that was interesting how that all panned about. Now, today, we're going to take it one step further, because you guys have been doing a lot of research into this ever since it's happened, and you've discovered some interesting stuff.
Well, our communications specialist, Kathy Hookstro, is a former investigative television reporter from down in the Saginaw area, We've been trying to figure out for sure how this happened. We've been pretty careful to say, you know, look, there's some indications here of some smoke, that there was some executive office involvement. You know, there was a email from an Ask Me official. Ask Me, I'm sorry, is a union, one of the two unions that made up this new public employees union, the UAW and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 25, made up this new union, Child Care Providers Together Michigan. And one of the Ask Me people had sent out some stuff saying, hey, look, you know, there was executive-level involvement. And we've seen the governor's legal staff was involved in the creation of the ILA and some other things along those lines. But during this entire process, the government's been kind of silent, and at least in court documents implying that she was sort of just an innocent bystander to the bureaucracy doing this, that the union asked for it and these things happened. Well, as we were researching some stuff, Kathy found a video from 2008 where the governor is addressing the International Ask Me Council conference. And the first sentences out of her mouth are, thanks to our partnership, we have unionized 40,000 daycare providers in Michigan. So it now clearly shows that the governor was involved in this from the get-go.
My gosh, I mean, in this day and time, in 2010, she really thought that she could that this wouldn't come out?
It was, well, I'll tell you what we were looking for was to, we were, originally we were trying to show the ties to the governor, and, you know, we'd say, look, she's proud about things. When she opens up a factory, she's there and gives a speech. And when she does this, she gives a speech, and she puts out news releases. And, you know, there haven't been any news releases about, or any kind of, things about this, so we went online just looking for examples of her having given out, you know, opening the factory speeches, and we found this. That's how Kathy found it. And in 2008, she addressed the AMSME Council, got up, and the first thing she said was, thanks to our partnership, this has been done. And now we have 40,000 people who are now daycare provider in this public employees union.
That is stunning, Patrick. That is absolutely stunning and realistically damning as far as making the connection.
Yeah, it finally puts a nice bow on this. We've long suspected that there has been involvement. When you look at what's happened nationally, it seems very clear that the unions came to a bunch of Democratic governors and said, you know, this is what we want to have happen, because you saw a lot of movement on this front in late 2005 and early 2006. And so we've long had suspicions that this has been the case, but we've never had anything where we can just say, okay, for absolute sure that I can come on your show and say, look, the governor was involved. We've had, like I said, the email, we've had some indications, we've had some really good circumstantial evidence, but this is pretty much a flat-out admission on the governor's part that she was involved with this thing from the get-go.
Give me a date. When did you all, at least approximately, discover this?
Oh, we discovered this, I'm going to say, maybe 3, maybe 4 days ago we found this video. We were waiting till after the election cycle. It must have been late last week, because we were waiting after the election cycle just because we knew everybody was going to be so focused on the primaries.
Oh, you didn't want to get lost in the shuffle. Yeah, that makes sense. Have you asked for any comments from the governor's office yet at all, or is it just breaking today as far as public stuff? Or?
It's going up today. It should be on our website here within an hour. We're adding one thing because, as you just noted, we did ask the governor whether or not she had made any comments about this, and we are trying to incorporate her deputy press secretary's comments into the video that we are placing up, showing her video and all of the other circumstantial evidence that we have that shows executive level involvement in this whole process.
So she knows, her office knows this is coming then, because you've left a comment.
If they are really aware of all the things that she has done, they should have a pretty good clue.
Yeah, so this is going to, and this will be made, as you said, the video is going to be going up. We've got a clip of the video, and I don't have enough time right now. It's about 6 minutes long. Is it best to listen to it, to play it on the show this morning, or is it still embargoed? What's the...
Oh, no, it's fine to play. The portion of Governor Granholm leads off, it's within the first 25, 30 seconds. So if during a break you want to cue it up and take a listen to it, that'd be more than fine.
Okay, that's cool. Let's plan to do that when we get back from the news break. We'll actually let people hear the clip on that. One thing that we've got a couple of minutes left, Patrick, and one thing that you've come on and talked about is what I've referred to, and I don't, now I'm not putting words in Patrick's mouth when I say this, I've kind of affectionately referred to, and I say sarcastically, as the black ops budget in the state, where they've actually this section of business in DHS was actually done away with by the legislature and yet kept going, and nobody seemed to know where the funds were. Can you take a minute and explain that story and where that's at?
Sure. What happened is that some legislatures, due to our lawsuit, became concerned about this Michigan home-based child care council. And they said, well, what, you know, now that they are aware that this thing really existed only as a as an entity to help in taking these dues from these people who are private businesses, they said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, we're just going to defund the thing. So the House Appropriations people and the Senate Appropriations people got together and they said, okay, we're not going to fund this thing. The problem is that in the way we do our budgets in Michigan, we roll up a lot of stuff. And what I mean by roll up is instead of putting a penny-by-penny expenditure, we put a gigantic number under the budget. So, you know, the state spends, I don't know, $44, $45, $46 billion or whatever it is. And then you break the departments out, and you have these large line items. And for child care services, it's in the hundreds of millions. And so within that hundreds of millions line, they had meant to eliminate this fake employer, this Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council. And the Senate knew this. The House, which was run by Democrats at the time, knew it, that they wanted this thing to be gone. And so all the administration did was look at that and go, well, we still have this wonderful big number, and we'll just move some money from over this pile into here and keep this thing running. And that's what they did.
Simply amazing. Simply amazing. And yet, the big one is they wouldn't admit that they were doing this. I mean, when they were brought in at first discussions with the legislature, they just wouldn't tell anybody where their money was coming from.
They lawyered up at first. They said that under the advice of counsel, they weren't going to tell the Appropriations Committee, who's in charge of their budget, how they funded something in from that appropriation. So they went on with that for, I think it was around 2 weeks. And finally they backed down. They realized the folly of that position and said, okay, well, we have to. And then they gave some explanations to the chair of the committee, Senator Bill Hardeman, and I believe to Representative Dudley Spade, and explained what they were doing and why. And the concern and the attempt to defund the Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council, the fake employer, is ongoing. It's going to be tried again for this budget cycle, is my understanding.
This is going to be interesting, and it's this little tentacle hydra-like thing that just keeps growing, it seems like.
Well, yeah, it is a pretty sad and sordid tale of government right now. It's about as abusive as anything I've seen. You've got people who are hiding budget dollars and apparently scheming from the start to increase membership with a political ally in stretching the definition of what we've considered public employees way past the breaking point. So it is a fascinating tale. Occasionally I am bemused by it, but then again, we're talking, we've got our clients up in your listening area, and there's 40-something thousand people who are affected by this. And a lot of them have absolutely no desire to belong to this union, and a lot of them don't understand why they're having money taken from their checks for a service they're providing.
Which includes our own Sherry Lohr, one of the people in your lawsuit that's from here in Petoskey.
That's correct.
And more conversation with Patrick Wright right now. He is the director of the Mackinac Center's Legal Foundation, chatting with him about the role that apparently Governor Granholm played, and I'll say apparently no longer in just a moment, in the bringing about this union daycare issue that has been going on, where they've basically forced 40,000 home daycare providers in the state to become government employees and hence part of a union, amazingly enough. Patrick Wright, as mentioned, is here. Good morning, sir.
Morning. How are you?
Doing good. Now, you'd mentioned that the governor's on, that there wasn't really proof before this clip of from the governor. I want to play that and let everybody hear it. So this is the governor speaking before the union organization. Take a listen.
In Michigan, because of the partnership between AFSCME and the governor's office, this means that 45,000 new AFSCME members, quality child care providers, will be on the ground providing care to children. That is great for our state.
And how great is it for our state, Patrick?
I would argue it's not all that great, because it was done in an illegal and improper manner. And, there's a number of states where we discuss, where there's, concerns about the level of public sector unionism, what we should have and shouldn't have. Some states ban it altogether. Michigan in 1965 enacted a law that allows it. It defines employee in a certain way, and it's certain the way that definition goes does not include people who run businesses out of their own house. It just doesn't include them. And so to have this underhanded scheme in order to rope all these 40,000, governor said 45,000 people into a union when it wasn't done through proper legislation, it's improper, it's an illegal.
I don't know how you can take somebody who runs a business, period, and tell them that they have to become a government employee, because realistically, that means they no longer own a business. I mean, by definition, unless the dictionary has changed, I mean, if you own a business as a sole proprietor, which is basically what most of these daycares are, doesn't that by itself mean that you operate the business? And how can you become an employee of someone else?
It is the mental gymnastics that go into this are just, they're striking. The thing that we found the most ironic was we had another client up from Petoskey, Dawn Ives, who, when we originally filed this case, was running her own place, Donnie Daycare. And she eventually had to shut down and she went to go work for Sherry. So Sherry got Dawn. Sherry, the employer, got Dawn the employee, and yet, according to the DHS and the governor, it is Sherry, the employer, who is an employee of some sort of governmental unit.
Yet Sherry's employee is not part of the union?
That is correct. Her employee would not be part of the union.
Incredible. Simply incredible. How somebody can keep a straight face and even tell that on sitting in Lansing is beyond me.
It has boggled the mind since I first started looking into this. You know, when Sherry brought this case to us and over a year ago, I just couldn't believe what she was saying. She sounded absolutely rational, but what she was telling me didn't make any sense. And we kept looking into it and peeling away more layers, and darned if all of this stuff wasn't happening.
Well, you probably have to sit there at the beginning of this and say, is this girl even telling me the truth? I mean, you probably have to think that at the beginning.
Well, I work for a place that is concerned about the overreaching powers of government, but I've also done some work for government. I worked in the AG's office for a while. I've worked for federal courts. I worked for the Michigan Supreme Court for a while. And so I understand the government does bad and stupid things. This doesn't border on incompetence. This borders on, this is an intentional bad thing. And so it was a whole new level to me. I hadn't seen something this egregious in quite some time.
What would you mentioned in quite some time? What would you compare this to?
The only other, from government, I haven't personally seen something of this ilk. The other thing I was thinking is more political is when the Reform Michigan Government Now thing, which was discovered by a Mackinac Center intern, where the political party was trying to transform Michigan's government by lying to the public about what the ballot initiative was going to do. They were going to try and strip off all the judges they didn't like and make all the redistricting rules go in their favor and all of that stuff. That's the other thing. But that didn't start from the government. That started from a political party and the unions, and then was imposed upon the people. This time, the government, the executive office, had an active role at the start for this.
We've got a call to take right now, and you can join in, too, at 866-371-1270, 866-371-1270. Facebook chat is now up as well. If you'd like to join in on Facebook, let's go ahead and grab this call and say hi. You're on the air, and we're Patrick Wright of the Mackinac Center. Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Price, my comment is twofold. One, if the government can walk in and force people to be their employee, then are we not living in a socialistic government and a takeover by the government for such things? And private enterprise is just kibosh now. But also, if this is true and this can happen, then is the state going to pay Sherry's Social Security and all her other benefits according to the Obama health care plan and take care of that? And if that happens, where that money comes from, it comes from the consumer who has to have their kid in daycare center, which is outrageously priced already. What do we, this is just a vicious circle that keeps going around, and people sit back on their haunches and don't do anything about it. I commend you for defending her, but I see if we don't get different people in there in our legislative body soon, this stuff's going to go on all the time.
That's a good question, Patrick. I mean, just take the practical for just a moment. What does the state give for being in the union? What do they get?
Well, right now, absolutely nothing. He's talking about the benefits package. Most people are used to being paid with a W-2. I would have your Social Security, your Medicaid, your workers, federal workers' compensation taken out of it. Sherry gets a what's known as a 1099 from the state, which indicates that she's an independent contractor. There's also the government websites are absolutely just have numerous places where they indicate that these home daycare providers are not at least state employees. The DHS place says it three separate times. They have a handbook which says that these people are not government employees. The MHB CCC has actually sent out emails to one of our clients, a woman, Paulette Silverson, out of Brighton, where they said, look, you're not an employee. So, or at least not in the traditional sense. So they are somehow not getting any of the usual benefits of employment, any of the health insurance, any of the of these taxes that are going on, and then instead have somehow ended up as the super special type of employee that can only end up paying union dues. That's the full extent of their employment.
Simply amazing.
And, yeah, and, you know, your caller's question leads to the question we've asked, which is, you know, who's next? If you accept this theory that having a client who receives some sort of government aid turns you into a officer of the government, then is any grocer next? Is any doctor next? How about anybody who has a tenant who has whose people are getting some sort of rent assistance? Or maybe you're just a guy who runs a hardware store. As long as any of your clients are receiving any kind of government assistance and you are indirectly taking government money, doesn't that make you a government employee?
Well, I think we're heading that direction in the federal side now, and maybe the state, this is just helping the toward that, because already, look, if you're a businessman if you're a business and buy something, anything more than $600, under the new rules, you're going to have to put in a W-2. I mean, somebody is gathering all this stuff for a reason.
Yeah, obviously there's all kinds of concerns about the scope of the way that government is picking some of this stuff up, about things that they're doing, particularly, you know, at the federal level. But even here at the state, in regard to this isn't the only one of these situations that is being attempted in. And, you know, there's a reason behind it, and that is that, at least in the private sector, the unions are losing people. They are now at the point where they're under 9 million members in private sector unions. It's the first time ever that there have been more people in public employees unions than there have been in private sector unions. And so as they're losing clout and people, they've been trying to come up with ways to drive up membership. And this scheme was one of those ideas that they came up with in order to try and keep up their membership and keep their clout up.
You want to join in, too. I'd love to hear from you at 866-371-1270, 866-371-1270. Now that you've been able to show that the governor was actively at least knew about this and involved and so forth, to what extent, I guess we'll find out, but certainly that she was part of the mix, where does it go from here? Why play devil's advocate. Why is it important? Where do you take it from here and so forth?
Well, I think it's important because it shows that there are people that were involved, that this wasn't just us. You know, when it is somebody on the outside doing something wrong, it's a little bit less of a concern than when your government is actively involved. And so, you know, you have now clearly some ties to the executive office, to Lieutenant Governor Cherry and to Governor Granholm about this entire process, and they have to be held accountable and asked what they're doing and why. I mean, they've put up a fairly big wall of silence on this. But here's the flaw in that. Governor Granholm was the attorney general of this state for 8 years. She's been a governor now closed in on 8 years as well. So she knows exactly what she can say legally, and she knows exactly what she can say politically. So this whole I can't say anything because it's in litigation argument, it just falls flat on its face. she is clearly competent to know what she can say legally and what she can't. She doesn't need anybody's help with that. She ran the Attorney General's office for 8 years. So this, at some point, people have to stop accepting that excuse and get after her and make her hold her account to what happened, find out why, and then we'll determine whether or not we think this is proper conduct of our government.
Yeah, now the question is, I've always wondered if, how really good she was at that, and I say that with this in mind. Look how she ordered Mike Cox to, you know, I order you to not do that health care law, I order you not to, and had no right to do so, but yet did anyway. You would think somebody that sharp would be able to do that, or would know she couldn't, rather.
There are some vagaries. I worked at the AG's office. I have a little bit of knowledge in this. There are some vagaries as to what the powers of the Attorney General's office are as sort of an independent legal officer. But having said that, the silence during a lawsuit, the reason why we lawyers like our clients to be silent is we don't want them to make admissions that are can harm the case. There's a theory out there that anything you say that is against your case can be brought up in a court of law. And so typically we like our clients to be silent just so that they don't do something that's going to harm them later, because they're not always sure of what they can say and what they can't. But Governor Granholm knows this. It's a basic evidentiary principle. She's been in charge of the AG's office for 8 years. Before that, she was a corporate counsel. If anybody knows what she can and can't say, and what is damning to her case and isn't, it would be her. And so this whole I can't talk about it because, or we can't have my administration talk about it because it's ongoing litigation, it's an absolutely silly argument.
You would absolutely, yeah, you would think so. Let's go ahead and check. Patrick Wright continues with me from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy Legal Foundation. We're chatting about the latest scenario coming up. Where does this go from here, Pat? You've been able to name some serious players in it, and where does the fight continue at this level?
Well, there's a couple of fights that are ongoing right now. Obviously, we're applying for leave to have the Michigan Supreme Court hear the case. We're very hopeful that the court will take the case up. The Court of Appeals dismissed it without saying, in essence, a word. So our clients, and despite the fact that this case has received national coverage, it's been on Fox News. It's been on Rush Limbaugh. It's been the Wall Street Journal. It's been on more radio shows than I can count, yours a number of times. Thank you very much. And newspapers all over the place. The Court of Appeals dismissed it without saying a word. So we haven't had anybody who has definitively said whether or not this is proper and explained the rationale behind it. So we're hopeful for that reason that the court will take the case. There's also some legislation moving. We mentioned earlier that there's a separate attempt to defund the Michigan Home-Based Child Care Council, that's ongoing as well. And a number of political candidates have expressed an interest in the matter. So we're hoping that there's some legislative and some judicial things ongoing all at the same time.
You want to join in the conversation, feel free to. 866-371-1270, 866-371-1270 is morning phone number. So are you feeling confident this will eventually be able to be resolved in an appropriate manner? I mean, we've seen some funky stuff in the courts here lately.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that it'll be taken care of by the Michigan Supreme Court. There's also a federal lawsuit run by another agency, the National Right to Work Legal Defense Fund, that is suing on I sued mostly on state grounds that the manner in which this was done was improper under Michigan's constitution. There is a suit that says that this is improper under the federal constitution, and that's ongoing right now in the Western District of Michigan. So there's another opportunity there. We think we've brought this enough attention within Lansing that, you know, if the elections turn out like they are projected to at this time, that there's a pretty good chance that this could be handled legislatively if the courts don't do the right thing.
Yeah, it looks like it's it does look like it's trending toward a group of people that will probably jump in with this with both feet, because everybody likes an early victory.
Right.
So I hate to say it like that, but that's realistic of it. Tell me about the video that I took a clip from. Tell me about what people can see when that comes up on the Mackinac Center's website.
Well, sure. First, you'll get an opportunity to see Governor Granholm expressing that she acted in partnership with AFSCME to do this in the first place, which is obviously a quite the revelation. And then we go through and we discuss more of the other details that are involved. The request in 2005 from Lieutenant Governor Cherry to Mott to ask if they'd like to be involved in somehow in this process. You know, that was his power base. He came from Genesee County. That's the area he represented as a state senator. He's also a former AFSCME official. Then we've got things where the governor's staff is meeting with Mott Community College in 2006. And then, you know, we walk through the AFSCME union lawyers' discussion of how the lieutenant governor's office is behind this. And so we put together a lot of pieces that we think clarifies once and for all the level of executive office involvement in this whole process. This was not something passive that just happened on their watch. This is something that they actively participated in. This is something that they were involved with almost from day one.
Fascinating to sit down and take a look at this. Are you still just as mind boggled by this as now that you've been in it a while? I mean, obviously you were when you first started seeing it. Is it still just when you look at this, just sit there and shake your head? Because it sure does me.
Yeah, it's amazing the brazenness with which they have done this. Again, though, when you look at the long term trends of what was happening in the union movement, you start see why these things were happening. They were, there was a split in 2005 between the AFL-CIO and SEIU, which ended up basically being changed to win. One of them kept AFSCME, the other one kept the SEIU, and they were arguing about whether or not they should try and do things like do more organizing drives or card check. And these unionizations of non-public employees and to create them into public employees was kind of an outgrowth of this attempt to gin up membership. And it happened in 2005 and 2006. And if you look at the numbers, you can see why it happened. Now, it shouldn't have happened, particularly in Michigan. The way it was done was illegal and improper. But you do start to understand what was going on and why these things were happening. You know, these people have had a lot of say in politics for a long time, and they just didn't want to give up that control.
It certainly appears that way, and so where it goes from here is just amazing. Because I think that's what we're seeing right now in the fall elections. We're seeing that same mindset of people who still don't want to give up that control. I mean, and I think we're going to see more and more of that as time goes.
Yeah, there's there's definitely a hubris, a I know better than you, an arrogance problem in this whole setup, and yet it has occurred. You know, we as a people, I think you're starting to see a bounce back to people that want a more humble government. They want a more limited government. They want a government that doesn't think that through central planning they can have all of the answers to all of our problems. And, there is a certain we know better than you that's involved in this.
Yeah, I think there is indeed. Now, we can check Mackinac.org is where we take a look, right, to see the video and so forth later today.
That is correct. It should be up momentarily, so.
Sounds good to me. Patrick Wright, thanks for the latest update on this story. Please keep us involved as this goes forward. We want to make sure this stays in the light of day here.
Appreciate it, Greg. Thanks for the opportunity.
Good talking to you today. This is Patrick Wright. He's with the Mackinac Center for Legal Foundation, here on 1270 AM WMKT.